I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the numbers don't lie. Washington State is heading toward economic ruin, and you need to remember that Democrats ignored all the warnings along the way. Plus, Americans are toying with a dangerous ideology, and more taxes are being passed to fund public safety, but how much of it will actually go toward, I don't know, improving public safety? That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show for $5. And join me this Sunday, November 23rd at Cougar Mountain Middle School in Issaquah for a super signer rally for the two Let's Go Washington initiatives, one to support protecting girls' sports and the other one to protect parental rights. That'll be 1 p.m. again at Cougar Mountain Middle School in the gymnasium in Issaquah this Sunday, November 23rd. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. The latest budget forecast for the state of Washington is out, and shock of the century, it's not good. I could have told you a year ago it wouldn't be good. It's not that I'm Nostradamus, it's just that I have common sense. And all the things that we've warned Democrats that would happen if they continued to overspend, if they continued to spend ideologically, if they continued to punish businesses with taxes, all the things we said would happen are happening. So projected state revenue through 2029 is now down by $66 million from the September forecast, which wasn't good. And so the closer we get to the beginning of the year, the worse and worse and worse the forecast becomes. And they say there are two things. Again, this is from OFM, which looks at this through a nonpartisan lens. It's not like there's some Republican in there who's like, oh, make the budget forecast look horrible. No, it's just bad. It says Washington's projected near general fund revenue collections through 2029 decreased by around $66 million from the September 2025 forecast, according to estimates released today by the Washington State Economic and Revenue Forecast Council. The changes in the forecast is the most important part to help you understand the entire segment we're about to do. The changes in the forecast are primarily the result of lower projections of housing permits and employment. Okay, keep those two things in mind. Lower projections of housing permits and employment means less money coming into the state coffers. So what does our fearless governor have to say about all of this? He said, talking about this upcoming legislative session, this budget will involve many difficult decisions. I'm working hard with my team and will be announcing my budget proposal in mid-December. I will be proposing a balanced budget that preserves core services but still makes investments in important areas. So this will be the first official budget that it'll only be his hands on in terms of his proposal. Because remember, when he took office in 2025, all the planning really for the budget happened under former Governor Jay Inslee. And that allowed him to absolve himself a little bit, right? Of course, within 3 months of taking office, he passed the largest tax increase in state history into law. But there was a little bit of an ability there for him to say, oh, well, you know, I adopted this horrible situation from the previous governor, although I think that's letting him off the hook, because when he was attorney general, he doubled the size of his office. When he was on the King County Council, he raised taxes by $1 billion. He's cut from the same cloth as the Democrats who came before him. But now he's gearing up slowly to get you ready for the eventuality of this coming budget. That, things are looking bad. And he's, you know, saying at the same time, but I'm reluctant to raise taxes again. Remember, we talked about this about a month or so ago when the news came out that Washington State Democrats are looking at imposing an income tax on high earners. This was from the State Standard, published October 30th. And what have Democrats always supported in the state? They want an income tax. They want an income tax so bad. And I think there's a school of thought, and I tend to agree, that they've maybe intentionally put us in this budget situation so they can justify an income tax. And this is the door to it. They're saying that they want to have a tax that targets those making above $1 million And that's how they start everything is, oh, don't worry about it. It won't affect you. It's for rich people. Tax the rich, punish the rich. And then, of course, once they get it in place, if they can legally do it, because an income tax that's like graduated or that targets or singles out one specific group of people is unconstitutional under our state constitution. But we know that they own the courts. And so if they want to do something, they're just going to go ahead and damn well do it. So that's happening. And when that story came out, Bob Ferguson said at the time he had gone to an event that he was speaking at, and he was asked while he was there by the state standard about this proposal that's been kicked around to tax high earners. And he said, we raised billions of dollars in revenue earlier this year, and I'm skeptical of additional revenue at this time. I'm skeptical of it. So that was his response when he was asked about this plan by Democrats to perhaps try to push through some sort of income tax. But again, he is just trying to distance himself from an eventuality that they are intentionally working toward. How do I know this? Well, he did it on the campaign trail when he was running for governor. Oh, I'm going to be a budget hawk and taxes aren't good. He said it in his first month on the job. He said it in his inaugural address that we need to, you know, be more cautious about raising taxes on people, and really acted like he was going to be this moderate, great steward of taxpayer funds. And I said all along, I mean, I literally called it. Again, I'm not saying I'm Nostradamus, but this stuff is very obvious, that he was acting like he was going to be really tough on new taxes. And then that way, when he signed new taxes into law, he would have convinced people that it was the only option, that there was no other choice on the table. The budget situation was so dire. I fought back until we realized that this was the only option left. And that's what he's doing now, too. It's like all these revenue forecasts are horrible. And this is really a West Coast problem. Blue states, they really don't know how to manage money. And they spend money on dumb stuff like laser hair removal for transgender inmates. And they're like, oh, my God, how do we get into such a budget crisis? And so he's going to say, well, I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical of an income tax. I'm skeptical of all these things. And then he's just going to do it, right? And in that statement I read from him a moment ago where he says, I will be proposing a balanced budget. Yeah, you have to propose a balanced budget. And also, whenever politicians do that and say, oh, it's a balanced budget. Yeah, you just pass a bunch of new taxes and then it's easy to make any budget balanced. Like, we could balance our budgets in our own homes if you just gave me a bunch of money. I'm like, look at that. My budget is balanced. Congratulations. It's ridiculous. But all of this, of course, was totally predictable. And we've been warning about it. The state Republican Party has been warning about this economic cliff that we're about to dive off for years. So going back to that Office of Financial Management report, where it says the changes in the forecast are primarily the result of lower projections of housing permits and employment. All right, primarily the result of lower projections of housing permits. Let's start with that one. Gee, if only someone had, I don't know, just earlier this year warned state lawmakers and Democrats that passing rent control would result in lower projections of housing permits.
There's clear agreement that housing supply is a foundational issue in Washington's housing crisis. Consumer protection policies like rent stabilization do not increase housing supply, and if adopted, should not result in Washington becoming less competitive than Oregon, California, and other neighboring states for housing investment. As written, the bill contains several components that create a more restrictive form of rent stabilization relative to other West Coast states. The bill contains a flat cap, while Oregon and California have caps with a mechanism to account for inflation. The bill contains a 10-year exemption for new construction, while Oregon and California exempt new construction for 15 years. And the bill exempts a limited number of owner-occupied rentals, while California exempts much broader categories of residential properties like single-family rentals, so long as they're not corporate-owned. With this bill, Washington risks sending investment capital to Oregon, California, and other neighboring states.
Yeah. Warned, that was the Washington Association of Realtors in January of 2025, as Democrats in Olympia were racing toward rent control. Remember, first day of the session, first week of the session, they gave that rent control bill a hearing. And so everybody knew they're going to try to pass this thing. And that was the warning from the very beginning. If you do this, this will happen. If you take this action, this is the consequence. They went in front of them, the developers, the builders, the realtors, and they said, if you pass rent control, fewer people will build homes. It wasn't just like some sort of empty threat. That was just honest. Why would we build a house here if you pass rent control? Why would we invest here when even other cuckoo crazy West Coast states don't have as stringent policies? We could go to Oregon. We could even go to California and have a better situation than we have in Washington state. So they warned them that that's what would happen. That's what happened. And now we're racing off an economic cliff. And again, one of the key reasons is a lower projection of housing permits. And it's not just housing. It's overall construction. We talked about this on the show on Monday. The Colliers report that had Seattle office space, 33% vacancy, 0 square feet of office space in Seattle right now is under construction. 0 square feet. They're not going to build it. It's the same concept applies here. You scared businesses away. You pushed businesses out of the city by targeting them for taxation. Those businesses did the same thing. They warned you, this is what we'll do. If you keep driving up costs, we won't be able to afford to continue to have a business here. And the legislature just what? Tried to call their bluff that wasn't a bluff at all? And then what happened? The businesses did exactly what they said they were going to do. And they left. Businesses big and small. Amazon did exactly what it said it was going to do when they passed a tax on high-paying jobs. And all the restaurants are doing exactly what they said they were going to do when they were punished for taxation, when they were told that they have to just absolutely overnight increase hourly wages. And now there's a bunch of restaurants closing. Again, it's really not rocket science, and these aren't empty threats. These are the stakeholders who make up your tax base. And they're telling you, if you do this, I'm going to do this. And you decide to do this anyway. And so they do what they told you they were going to do. And then your tax base collapses. And that's how you wind up with the largest tax increase in state history. That's how you wind up with the kind of budget projections and shortfall projections that came out yesterday. And so what are they going to do? Eventually your tax base collapses. Where are you going to go for the money? No, you're going to be in economic ruin. There won't be anyone left to tax. And they don't get it. State Rep. Travis Couture, who's a Republican, and he's the budget lead for Republicans, he put out a statement in light of this new revenue forecast. He said sales tax, B&O tax, and use tax collections all came in lower than expected when families can't afford everyday life and employers can't afford to stay open. The state's revenue falls apart. That's exactly what we're seeing. He went on to say good family wage construction jobs and manufacturing jobs are disappearing as those industries look for friendlier states. But the larger picture shows that our economy is stagnating. Housing permits are collapsing and affordability keeps getting worse. And again, it's not just, as he points out there, it's not just the business sector. You know, it's not just developers who say we're not going to build there. It's not just businesses, big and small, that say we're going to look for a friendlier state. Your citizens are looking for friendlier states, too. And I will tell you what, a whole hell of a lot more of them will be looking for friendlier states if you go ahead and pass an income tax or, frankly, any new taxes on them this year after pushing through the largest tax increase in state history. And you want to act like singling out people who make more than $1 million a year is some genius idea. No, that's a very important part of your tax base. And if they just up and disappear and move to Florida or move to Texas or move to Montana or Idaho, you're not going to get a dime from them. You're not going to get a dime from them in this new income tax on high earners. You're not going to get a dime from them in property taxes on the big, beautiful homes that they pay property taxes on. You're not going to get a dime for them in sales taxes on any of the nice things that they buy with all that money that they've got. You're not going to get jack shit from them. And then guess what? Your budget and economic forecasts are going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. And they're going to warn you that they're going to do it. The same thing will happen. You'll come out. I mean, good God, could that statement from the head of the Washington Realtors, could that be any more clear? 1 year ago, we're going to do this. They passed it anyway. That's exactly what's happening. So if they try to push through an income tax on high earners, you're going to have people who go down to Olympia and they're going to testify and they're going to tell Democrats, if you pass this, I'm moving to Florida. And Democrats won't listen because they're on their high horse and they don't care about impacts. They want to please a certain segment of their base. And then those people are going to move to Florida. And they're going to be like, oh my God, where'd all our money go? How are we going to pay for transgender inmates to get laser hair removal and boob jobs now? And they're going to have meltdowns. And then they're going to come to the working class people and the poor who can't afford to up and move. And they're going to find new ways to tax you. Because you always get stuck with the taxes. You always get stuck with the burden because people who can move will move. People who can move their family, people who can move their business, people who can move their investments, they're going to move them. And the rest of us are going to be stuck here footing the bill. And this is just the state. This is one of the reasons I talk so much about why Seattle is so important. And so many of us, I understand, are just eager to write off Seattle and say, well, if they want a socialist mayor, they can have a socialist mayor and they can, you know, deal with the consequences of that. Unfortunately, we don't have that luxury of writing off Seattle. When we look at state revenue forecasts, Seattle factors into that quite a bit. And now you have a socialist mayor who is going to continue to push Seattle as a city toward economic ruin and is already pledging to do what? Raise taxes.
We will need to pursue new progressive revenue in order to fund our priorities and make sure that we're delivering services to the people of Seattle. There's several progressive tax options I proposed as part of my platform, and so we're going to have city staff looking into developing those into legislation. Don't know yet exactly what the timeline's going to be on that.
Progressive revenue, which will be regressive for the entire city. And of course, they always, progressive revenue to them means tax the rich. Make the rich pay their fair share. So let's just put our pretend caps on, make believe, and let's pretend that I'm a big business. Boop. And I'm already struggling in Seattle. I already know that city leadership doesn't like me. They don't appreciate my contributions. They don't appreciate the high-paying jobs that I bring to the city. They're already targeting those out for taxation. I'm also having a hell of a time operating in the city because all my costs are going up. All my wages, they're forced to go up. It's not even safe. People don't even enjoy living here. And now I've got a socialist mayor who's already threatening to tax me more and says insane shit like this.
I want what much more land and wealth to be owned and stewarded by communities instead of corporations.
Yeah, I hear something like that and I'm like, well, I'm leaving. You have a mayor coming in who wants, basically, just like Mamdani in New York, wants to seize private property, wants it stewarded by the community, wants to seize the means of production. That's insane rhetoric. And you think that businesses will stay? That doesn't compute to me. Explain to me why you believe in New York or Seattle that businesses would stay. When you vilify them, when you target them, before you even take the job, you're talking about taxing them even more, even though they've already been targeted for taxation. And now you're saying they shouldn't even be able to own the buildings that they operate in. This is going to be economic collapse. It's economic suicide. And it's so avoidable. And even at a baseline level, all of these new laws where we're having the intent, you know, the consequences, the obvious consequences. 6 years ago, Republicans in Olympia, when our state was in a fantastic economic situation 6 years ago, and this is really before they started in earnest trying to punish the rich and do all these crazy, far-flung left-wing things. And what do Republicans do? 6 years ago, 2019, I was covering the legislature at the time. They said, hey, Democrats, like, you know, our budget's looking pretty good. Maybe we should just hit the brakes a little bit, save more money for a rainy day, and really stop, every time we get more revenue, stop bloating our budget to match. Because that's what would happen. We'd have this great influx of new revenue or of tax collections, and Dems would be like, great, let's spend every freaking cent of it. And they just grew and grew and grew the size of government. And Republicans were like, don't do that. Don't do that. Because one day that bubble is going to burst and we're going to be really screwed. And that bubble is about to burst and we're going to be really screwed. Now, we've talked a lot about the economic consequences of embracing socialism. And again, I want to make clear that it's not just about like Katie Wilson in Seattle. and Zohran Mamdani in New York City. I really believe that the modern day, and I've said this a million times since their election, the modern day Democratic Party in places like New York City and in states like Washington, they're basically socialists. And I'm not saying that, that's not hyperbolic. Look at some of the things that the Democratic Party has passed. They're socialist policies. Reparations? Rent control? Pay for striking workers? These are socialist policies. So they can call themselves moderate Democrats, liberal Democrats, progressive Democrats, democratic socialists. They're voting for socialist policies. So we've been kind of tiptoeing toward socialism for a long time in Washington state, at least the last 10 years. And they can call it whatever they want to call it, but it's really just socialism. And I think it's important to underscore how dangerous of a time this is. And there might be people who believe, and we'll have this debate later in the show in our subscriber show question, there might be people who believe that America is insulated from the type of socialism or communism that has ruined other countries and has destroyed other countries. But I, for one, don't want to find out. I don't want to find out. We had this great guest on Sundays with subscribers. I want to play a clip from her interview to really instill in everyone how dangerous this moment is for us. So her name is Trinh Han, and she, her family fled from Vietnam, from communism in Vietnam, and they came to the United States seeking a better life, which I always point out, people never flee capitalism for communism. They never flee capitalism for socialism. It's always the other way around. There's a reason for that. And her story is just absolutely remarkable. So Trinh's father, he was an intelligence officer for South Vietnam and ended up in a re-education camp for years under the communist regime in Vietnam. I think it was seven years or so that he spent in a re-education camp. And after he got out of the camp, there was a program for families who were being persecuted by the communist regime in Vietnam to come to the United States. And Trinh and her family came here in the mid-1990s. And so this isn't like ancient history. You know, there are still five full-blown communist nations in the world. One of them is Vietnam. Vietnam is still controlled by a single party, the Communist Party of Vietnam. And still today, modern day, it is having disastrous consequences for the people who still live there. So I want to just play a clip from Trinh about the dangerous road that Americans are embarking on.
I think one of the critical questions we should be asking ourselves is, why are Americans still drawn to a political ideology that has failed time and again everywhere it has been tried? And some commentators, some of your guests even, may point to rising costs, stagnant wages, frustration with the political establishment as reasons for America's drift to the far left. I think that sense of disillusionment is real, yes, especially among younger Americans. But those are social causes that could explain any political trend. For me, the larger reason Americans still want to realize socialism at home, it's rooted in a kind of American exceptionalism, the belief that we can do better than anyone, anywhere, and anything we put our mind to. And it's the same creed that drives ingenuity in the sciences, drives our excellence in industry, and it's really the spirit of discovery that's unique to America. We create, we test, we innovate, and perfect like no one else. And I'm afraid that same drive now fuels the political left's conviction that America can finally get socialism right. Yeah. It's emboldening the left to believe that this time America can perfect what others have failed to achieve. And in their eyes, socialism isn't a rejection of America's story, it's an extension of it. The belief that we can make government itself as innovative as Silicon Valley and as visionary as NASA. But history, as we all know, tells a different story. From Eastern Europe to Asia to Latin America and Vietnam, every socialist experiment has exacted a terrible human cost. Poverty, repression, hunger, fear, and death, all of which my family experienced when we were in Vietnam. Families broken, faith forbidden, the spirit of individuals crushed under the weight of the collective. And so to imagine that we can somehow master what others could not, it's not, that's not a mark of progress. That's historical amnesia to me. So for me, America's greatness has never come from collective control. It's from individual freedom. It's the freedom to take risks, to fail, to try again until you master it. But our genius is not from given by the state. It's from the people. So I think the challenge before us isn't just to criticize sort of socialism and its current rise. It's to reclaim the moral energy behind it. We must show that the American experiment is grounded in liberty and personal responsibility, and that still holds the best promise for justice, for prosperity, and for human dignity.
And it always has. It always has. And that phrase she uses, historical amnesia, that's what we're going through right now. Hell, we're not even going through historical amnesia. We're going through like amnesia from a couple months ago. I mean, again, when we look at the warnings that were given about, hey, these policies will do this. Rent control, for instance. It's not like rent control has never been tried in the United States. It's been tried, it always fails. It always has these consequences, but it's like they want to do it anyway. Total amnesia, blinders. And it's a very, very dangerous thing. And for her father, I mean, you might think we're a far cry from re-education camps. I mean, hell, look at the amount of dissent that was crushed during the pandemic. Look at what happened to people, I mean, cast into the outskirts of society and shunned by their neighbors. People were telling on their neighbors. One of the things Trin talks about in this interview is, the fear that her family lived under while and after her father was in the re-education camps in Vietnam. It was like you just didn't speak out, you didn't talk about it, you didn't, do these things. And I mean, during the pandemic here, think of how many people were snitching on their neighbors. We're calling the government to say, oh, my neighbors are having a house party. That's the same kind of stuff, whether it was in the Soviet Union or whether in Vietnam, that people were expected to do. It's like you're not following what the government said. You're not following the ideology, and it turned citizens against one another. We're seeing so many indicators of what has happened and what has really been disastrous and dangerous and deadly in other places. We simply cannot look the other way and have this historical amnesia. If you want to watch that full interview with Trin Ha, it's really quite fantastic, her insights and what happened to her family and the poverty and the desperation that they lived under in communism. Go to undividedpod.com, sign up to become a subscriber, undividedpod.com. It was on this past episode of Sundays with Subscribers. I wanted to ask you guys in our daily show poll, it was something Trin and I talked about as well. Do you believe America could ever be at risk of becoming a communist nation? Full-blown communist nation ruled by avowed communists? Yes or no? Nicole, yes or no?
Well, ever, yes, because I think that the further away we get from knowing or remembering what that has done, the more likely we are to repeat mistakes. And it sure seems like we forget very easily. And right now it's just forgetting, but at some point it'll be not ever knowing.
Yeah. And I don't even know if it's, so much, oh, it literally take over by a communist party or whatever it is, but allowing some facets of communist society to become normal in America. Where it's like, oh, you can't speak out against the government, can't do this, can't do that. Oh, socialism, yes, all the government's taking my property for the good of the people. Like, I definitely see elements of communism that would absolutely be embraced by a certain segment of Americans. I hope that our institutions are strong enough and our constitution and our checks and balances are strong enough that it would never actually become a communist nation. So I lean toward no, but I think it's important to always remember the dangers of communism. And I mean, it's not like it's history though. I mean, there's five communist nations and more socialist nations in the world today. Most of you say yes. 65% say yes, you do believe America could be at risk of becoming a communist nation. Michelle says absolutely. one generation without any knowledge of history and the communists will be voted in. Right. How far removed do you have to be, to Nicole's point? Eric, I used to have more faith in the American voter, but looking at the idiots who have been elected recently, especially in Washington, it's a real risk. And I don't know how much of that really we can blame on young voters. Look at the amount of, kind of call them the geriatrics, right, who have been out there protesting against kings, and they're more than happy to be lorded over by people of their own political ideology. It's so strange. Randall, I chose no, but I believe it will be a very close call. And again, let's not gamble with it. We have to, at the very onset, snuff it out. Make sure people know history. Make sure they hear stories like the stories of Trin and her father. I mean, her father lives in California. He's still alive, as is her mother. And she said he's following what's happening in Seattle and New York City very closely because he's literally lived through it. I mean, it's unreal. Jeff, chunks of the country may be headed in this direction, but we will have another civil war over it at some stage. And I would hope so, frankly. I would hope that before we have a communist takeover, Americans at least try to wage a civil war. I mean, I'm not encouraging it, but I'm serious.
It's like something
that's
to fight for.
Right, something to fight for. I mean, if we had a civil war over the monarchy, we sure as hell better have a civil war before communists take over our country. Joe Schmo, halfway there already with property taxes and DEI BS having replaced meritocracy. We're slowly allowing it to seep in. We're accepting certain elements of socialism and communism when we should be revolting against them. And Democrats, too. Don't even, first of all, this pisses me off. I get messages from Seattle Democrats and who don't want to associate with me, right? Don't want to associate with me publicly because I'm right wing or I'm conservative. And they think associating with me is worse than associating with someone like Katie Wilson? The person you should be shunning and shutting out of any conversations, any meetings, any events, anything is the socialist. And until you're ready to do that, then you're as guilty as anyone for the rise of socialism. You know, they want to almost placate the far left because it's just a reality in Seattle. It's a reality because you placate them. It's a reality because you even entertain conversations and relationships with them when you should absolutely shun them and speak out about them at every available opportunity. Just wild stuff. Absolutely crazy. All right, coming up next, another city hikes sales taxes without a vote of the public to fund public safety. But what are they really funding? Do we even really know? I'm not sure. First, with talk of an AI bubble, are you concerned with the risk exposure of your retirement portfolio? Even AOC was talking about the AI bubble. And I was like, actually, she's on to something there. So if the answer is, you know, Brandy, I don't know how much risk I'm exposed to. Start by attending Zach Abraham's free review preview live webinar. It's happening tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. In it, he'll talk, of course, about the AI bubble, what kind of risk is involved with that. And then they'll talk about the impact AI is having on the market, a preview for 2026, how critical Bulwark's deployment of value investing is to retirement portfolios, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So register now for the free November 20th, that's tomorrow, webinar schedule. So that's 3:30 p.m. Pacific. You can still register. Just go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. And while you're there, subscribe to Zach's daily market recap. And you can also schedule your own individual Know Your Risk portfolio review. Again, that's knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right. The city of Auburn has just passed a sales tax increase thanks to a new state law that allows them to do it without a vote of the people in order to fund public safety. This from the Center Square. Auburn hikes sales tax without public vote to fund criminal justice. It becomes just the latest Washington city to do so, taking advantage of a new state law allowing cities and counties to implement a 0.1% sales and use tax for criminal justice purposes without a voter-approved referendum. It happened during a Monday night meeting when they approved the tax hike as an additional source of funding to address public safety needs. Now, I think it's important to note just a small correction in that story. It doesn't allow cities and counties to implement the sales tax. It mandates, the law mandates, that they implement the sales tax in order to access a block of funding that the state will provide. So they can't access this funding that was set aside by the state unless they, isn't that weird? Unless they pass an additional sales tax. So it's sort of like, we'll give you some money, but you need to find new revenue sources as well. This was, of course, House Bill 2015, which was Governor Bob Ferguson's baby and the result of a promise that he made on the campaign trail that he was going to make sure that Washington State was no longer the last state in the nation in terms of police officers per capita. But the form of House Bill 2015, and this is critical, it changed shape a lot over the legislative session. Remember what Bob Ferguson promised it would be? Bob Ferguson promised it was going to be, do you have this video, I think, from Bob, that this was going to be about hiring more cops.
In my inaugural address, I made a promise that this legislative session, we must provide significant funding to hire more law enforcement officers in our state. We ranked last, 50th, per capita in number of law enforcement officers. That needs to change. I pledge to work with both sides of the aisle to ensure this critical funding made it through the legislature. I'm so pleased to have House Bill 2015 before me now to help address this situation.
But of course, that was all a lie. Yes, the money can be used to hire more police officers, but the law also said the money could be used for peer counselors, behavioral health personnel, and a variety of other things, even like emergency response to natural disasters, anything that they could characterize as in the public safety realm, because some of the Democrats further to the left watered it down because, of course, they hate cops. So they're like, we'll approve this fund of money as long as it can go to other things, like alternatives to policing. And so Bob claims it's about hiring more cops, but we don't even know if a single dollar of that money has been used to hire more police officers yet. And even the city of Auburn, when they passed this, they even acknowledge that they don't even have to tell people what they're going to use the money for and won't even know what they're going to use the money for until maybe as late as 2027, 2028. It says adoption of this ordinance does not commit the council to any specific spending programs beyond 2026. If approved, the city anticipates beginning tax collection on April 1st, 2026, resulting in an estimated $2 million increase in revenue, which is currently proposed and reflected in the mid-biennial budget amendment. Further allocation of funds will be determined during the 2027-2028 biennial budget process to identify specific programs supported by this revenue. It's because they know damn well that they can basically use it for whatever the hell they want, as long as they can put it under some sort of like public safety umbrella broadly. And so all this money, Bob Ferguson, again, is claiming this victory. I love cops, even though he's hated cops his whole career, tries to put him in prison for political purposes. I love cops. I want us to have more police. And he's going to be able to claim some sort of win. And we won't even know for years whether one single dime of this millions and millions of dollars was actually used to hire more police officers. And newsflash, it's not going to be. It's absolutely not going to be. In the city of Auburn, though, and this bothers me so much, every time any city passes a new tax, what do they do? Well, they're always like, well, it's just, you know, an extra $3 a month, or it's an extra $50 a year. It's no big deal. But of course, when you add all of the new taxes up, I mean, they just say that to make it more palatable for people. And I find it actually quite condescending. Here's them talking about how much it'll cost the average family.
If we're assuming a median income for households of roughly $95,000, if they're spending on average 20% of their gross income on sales tax for items, that 0.1% increase, because remember, it's not the total sales tax amount, but that difference, would come out to about $19.07 in the course of a year. And so when we're talking about the need to make sure that we can, you know, have a solid police force with enough officers to cover, you know, the geography of the city, when we talk about making sure that we can continue to afford our costs with regards to the SCORE jail, or be able to support our prosecutors in being able to address crime within the city, I think that people need to understand what is being asked of them and what they get in return. And so I just want to make sure that we call out what that 0.1% increase would be for what's expected to be an average household.
Eye roll. You just need to understand what's being asked of you and what you're going to get in return. And I would also say, it's stupid in any scenario to have to raise taxes for public safety, because this should be one of the core things you pay for with the existing tax revenue you have. Like, you're paying for all this bonus stuff when public safety, a few other select items, should be the real priorities of government. And so, I mean, just to listen to the condescension and, oh, it's just $20 a year. What are you, poor? Just $20 a year? What, do you have no money? You don't have a job? You can't help us with public safety? Auburn, far from the only city that has taken advantage of this program. To what end? We don't know. Bellingham, and I love how the headlines are different now. When you read these headlines, Bellingham moves ahead with tax to fund public safety programs. Remember what was promised, though, for cops, more cops. But that's not how they're referring to it anymore, because that would be an inaccurate way to refer to it, because we know it's not just for cops anymore. It's for some amorphous public safety something. In the Olympia, city of Olympia, they're trying to do this. Linden, King County, Seattle. So what's going to happen with that money? Well, hell if I know. Hell if I know, I don't. So we'll have to, and we're going to continue to ask, hey, have you spent that money yet? Have you spent that money yet? Did you hire any new cops? Did it actually do what Bob Ferguson promised it would do? Probably not. Just absolutely ridiculous. All right, we'll get to our segment Unbelievable next. Speaking of public safety, you can't have public safety if there aren't consequences. When people who do unthinkable things get a slap on the wrist, it doesn't matter how many freaking cops you have. It doesn't matter how many cops you have out there arresting criminals. If the criminals aren't held accountable, it's all worthless. We'll talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. First, reach out to our friends at Valentine Roofing for a variety of needs. Maybe you want some custom holiday lights and you've been waiting for your husband to do it and he hasn't done it yet. Just call Valentine Roofing. Have them do your custom holiday lights for you. Take the stress off of the... You already have enough stress on the holidays. You don't need hanging up lights and falling off ladders and all those things to add to it. So have Valentine Roofing do that for you. They can also, of course, help you with a roof. Maybe you've got a leak you need checked out. They'll come check that out for you, see if your roof can be repaired. If not, they can replace your roof. They also do gutters, installation and cleaning, attic insulation, exterior cleaning, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You're always going to get the same great Valentine service, seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, and a team that always goes the extra mile. Plus, they have flexible financing options, including zero down, 0% interest. So taking care of your home has never been easier. Schedule your free estimate by calling 206-ROOFING. Again, call 206-ROOFING, and please tell them that you heard about them right here on Undivided. All right, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Again, we could have, you know, 1,000 police officers for every citizen. And they could be out there arresting people for every single crime that's committed. Cop on every corner. Wouldn't matter if those cases get in front of a judge and offenders just get a slap on the wrist. Because again, if there's no consequence for them, they learn that. And they realize that I can get away with these crimes with no punishment or just a little bit of punishment. And it's worth it to me. So it's important that we talk about the totality of the criminal justice system. So I do want to warn you on the front end that this story is pretty disturbing. I have a hard time watching the surveillance video from this story. We're also going to see some wounds that a woman suffered from gunshots. So if that is going to make you squeamish, I just want to give you that if you're watching the show, not listening today, on the front end. So there was this horrible crime. I'm going to let our friend David Rose over at Fox 13 explain what happened to this 67-year-old victim.
On April 5th of last year, Tina stopped at the ATM in Covington to deposit a check. She had just put her card in the machine when two 20-year-olds, Trice Famavange and Colby Delamar, surprised her.
What do they say to you when they come up?
They said, take $1,000 out of the machine. You're going to give me $1,000 right now.
Tina was trying to explain to Trice that her bank has a limit on withdrawals.
He was having no part of it. He says, I know you can, and you're going to do it right now. And I said, no, I can't. And he shoved me out of the way.
Delamar was holding her at gunpoint.
Somehow, somewhere, I managed to yell, help me. Don't ask me how. I just know it came out. And as soon as I said that, he turned and fired.
Ugh. Tina fell back to the ground.
Could you believe you'd been shot?
No.
A nearby store worker heard the gunfire and raced to help stop the bleeding. Tina's 10-year-old granddaughter was in the car and saw everything.
Oh my gosh, that video every single time. I mean, you got this woman, she's in Covington, for God's sakes. She's at an ATM, gets approached two young men with guns. And I mean, at that point, they've already got her stuff. They're already doing the thing they need to do at the ATM, and they shoot her anyway multiple times. She talked to David Rose about her wounds.
Right here is one bullet wound. There's another bullet wound here. I have another here. I have eight wounds because of entry and exit, plus one of the bullets that struck my leg broke my femur and fragmented, so some of the fragments came out.
Yeah. I mean, that's attempted murder, right? You shoot someone that many times, you're trying to kill them. And it's actually shocking she didn't die, because think of the arteries that you have there in the leg. And there are some areas there where if you get shot, you're bleeding out. Like, it doesn't matter how quick help gets to you. So she's lucky to be alive. So this case, they get arrested. This case goes to trial. Colby Delamar was the 20-year-old who had the gun who actually shot her. And in court, he offers an apology to the victim, and they tried to use drugs as an excuse. Colby's dad claimed he was on drugs, on fentanyl all the time. That's the only reason. It's like, no, well, I mean, you had a gun. You came there with a gun to rob her. Whether you were on fentanyl at that point, to me, doesn't matter. But here's Colby apologizing to Tina in court.
I know I left you scarred physically and mentally. Deep down, no amount of time will fix what I've done, because I have made a horrendous mistake that both of us will struggle to live with for the rest of our lives. Lastly, Tina, I want to ask you if you would please accept my apology as a young, dumb person for the traumatizing things I did to you.
Okay. I'm shedding no tears for him. And 20 years old, you're an adult. You're an adult. But in our state, they want to even treat a 20-year-old as a kid. And if you're a black kid, oh, that's another check on the progressive list where we should just take it easy on you, you know, because you don't know what you do. In our state, of course, you can, you know, make medical decisions without parental consent because you're mature enough to do that. At 20 years old, you can make a decision to have life-altering surgery to change your gender, and Democrats cheer that on. But at 20, you're just not old enough to understand. Your brain's not fully formed. You didn't know what you were doing. So King County Judge Sandra Widlin. Now, this is an example, I think, of a judge who maybe recognizes, which is really rare in King County, the sentence I'm about to hand down is not proportionate to the crime. But this judge actually, in handing down the sentence that he was given, blames Democrats in the state legislature.
She noted that this was a horrible crime and acknowledged the anger that Tina's many supporters in the courtroom feel. Judge Widlin also explained that she's required to follow the sentencing range set by the state legislature of just over 9 years to just over 12 years in prison. In addition, the state Supreme Court says judges must consider the age of the defendant. Delamar was 20 when he shot Tina.
And what that means is I have to look through a lens that says this is not someone who is 40 years old that committed this crime. And I understand that that is a hard thing for people to hear sometimes, because all of us know 20-year-olds who wouldn't pull the trigger. Right? And I understand that too. But even with that said, I'm required by the law to consider Mr. Delamar's age. And so, Mr. Delamar, I'm sentencing you to 132 months in prison. That is 11 years in prison. The period of community custody following your release is 36 months. So you'd be on probation for 3 years after your release.
11 years. He's not going to do all that time either. 11 years for trying to murder a woman. Trying to murder a woman who's got eight holes in her body from four different gunshots, who was doing absolutely nothing wrong. He ended up pleading guilty to assault in the first degree and attempted robbery in the first degree. Should have been attempted murder. And also, I'm not going to let that judge off the hook, although she's blaming state lawmakers, because prosecutors asked for about 12 and a half years, which she could have done on the highest range that she was allowed. And judges are always allowed to issue an exceptional sentence. Judges are always allowed to use that discretion. It happens. So she gave him 11 years, right? But also this idea that we have to consider the defendant's age. So, okay, When does somebody really become an adult? Is it 20? So it's not 20, apparently. Oh, 20 is really young. It's not a 40-year-old who did this. Okay. So at what time, at what point is your youth not an excuse for the crime that you committed? 21, 22, 23, 24, 25? At what point am I really an adult? Because in Washington State, technically by law, you're an adult at the age of 18. And we could go all over it. You could do all these things. You could sign up for the military. You could serve your country. Again, you could cut off your healthy breasts and genitals if you want to without parental consent at 18. But you're just not formed enough up here to know that you shouldn't shoot an innocent woman four times for no reason. So yeah, hire all the cops you freaking want. Put a cop on every street corner. It doesn't matter when we have laws like that pushed by politicians like the ones we have and judges who, I don't know, 11 years seems like a good enough deal. Absolutely unbelievable. It's absolutely insane. All right, we'll get to some national news coming up next. First, we continue to get great stories from you guys about your success with the First Mark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. Christine says that she was about to be dropped because her carrier was dissolving and she freaked out because she knows that her insurance is complex. She's got two businesses. Her homeowner's insurance is also complex. They were about to add a third car. She's like, I'm totally screwed. So she's like, wait, what did Brandy keep telling me to do? Oh, that's right. Take the First Mark Challenge. So she did it. And guess what? Save $10,000 a year. Got great insurance, save $10,000 a year, even with an additional vehicle on her policy. So that's just one of the many First Mark Insurance success stories that we have. FirstMarkInsurance.com, call them, schedule time to take the First Mark Challenge. You'll go through your current insurance, talk about your insurance needs, and they'll go out, shop their market of carriers for you. And you never pay them a dime, which is great. Christine said, Brandy, thanks for your continual nagging about doing the First Mark Challenge. You're welcome. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. All right, some national news. Nicki Minaj, she's in her political era. I love this for her. So we'll play a clip in a moment. She spoke to the United Nations and thanked Trump for advocating for action against action over violence against Christians in Nigeria. But just a little bit of background here, if you're not familiar with the context of the story. This from the BBC. Award-winning rapper Nicki Minaj has publicly backed President Donald Trump's allegations that Christians face persecution in Nigeria. I just have to love these stories, how they call it allegations. And they hate Trump so much that they'll even try to pretend like Christians aren't being persecuted and murdered in Nigeria. And they'll make it a they'll try to share both sides of the story. It's just wild. But anyway, Minaj said on Tuesday at an event organized by the U.S. in Nigeria, Christians are being targeted. Churches have been burned. Families have been torn apart simply because of how they pray. On Wednesday, Nigerian police in the southwestern Kwara state confirmed a deadly attack on a church in the town of Yoruku, where gunmen opened fire on worshipers the previous day, killing two people and abducting several others. Local media say armed men identified by residents as bandits stormed the Christ Apostolic Church during an evening program on Tuesday evening, shooting the pastor and rounding up the faithful at gunpoint. Gee, sure sounds like an attack on Christians to me. But the BBC goes on to report, for months, right-wing campaigners and politicians in Washington have been alleging that Islamist militants were systematically targeting Christians in Nigeria. Deadly disputes are also often over vital resources like land and water or fueled by inter-ethnic tensions rather than religion, say analysts. Oh, thank you, analysts, for providing me. It's just so stupid. Earlier this month, Trump said he would send troops into Nigeria, guns ablazing, if its government continues to allow the killing of Christians. The Nigerian government has pushed back on these claims, describing them as a gross misrepresentation of reality. Regardless, Nicki Minaj is firmly in President Donald Trump's corner on this. Here is what she said, in part, to the United Nations.
I would like to thank President Trump for prioritizing this issue and for his leadership on the global stage in calling for urgent action to defend Christians in Nigeria, to combat extremism, and to bring a stop to violence against those who simply want to exercise their natural right to freedom of religion or belief. But today, faith is under attack in way too many places. In Nigeria, Christians are being targeted, driven from their homes, and killed. Protecting Christians in Nigeria is not about taking sides or dividing people. It is about uniting humanity. This is about standing up in the face of injustice. It's about what I've always stood for my entire career, and I will continue to stand for that for the rest of my life. I will care if anyone, anywhere, is being persecuted for their beliefs. Thank you.
And I think she did a great job. But of course, the unhinged people are like, oh, she's being used by Donald Trump. And maybe she is. I'm sure they're like, she's a great spokesperson for this. We can get people to pay attention to this issue who wouldn't otherwise pay attention to it. She has a massive platform. If she cares about this issue, why would we not let her talk? But, you know, and then even as she said there, it's not controversial at all. It's like people are being persecuted. It's very clear. I'm passionate about this issue. But because it's Donald Trump saying, Donald Trump spearheading it. Well, now Nicki Minaj is just a horrible person. I'm sure she's racist, too. I'm sure they'll find a way to call her racist for standing up for herself. But I like this. I like Nicki's political era. And she's using her voice and her platform to advocate for something that she believes in. More power to her. All right. A couple months ago on the show, we talked about how Texas was passing a law that required putting the Ten Commandments in schools. And I was opposed to it. I think there's separation of church and state. You do not need to put the Ten Commandments in public school districts. That makes no sense. Are there some commandments that are great lessons for kids? Yes. Rewrite them a little bit. Teach them to kids like the Golden Rule. So I was very opposed to this, and now a federal judge has ruled that the law requiring the display of the Ten Commandments is unconstitutional. I agree. Yell at me if you want, people. I agree. It says U.S. District Judge Orlando Garcia found that Senate Bill 10 violates the Establishment Clause of the U.S. Constitution, which prevents the government from establishing or favoring a religion. Yeah, the country was formed for freedom of religion, people. You can't just push one religion. I am relieved that as a result of today's ruling, my children, who are among a small number of Jewish children at their schools, will no longer be continually subjected to religious displays, said plaintiff Lene Bien Wilner. The government has no business interfering with parental decisions about matters of faith. Who can disagree with that? What conservative could disagree with that? I'm sure. Are you about to disagree with that?
Well, I want you to read the next one, too. But sure. I do disagree with that statement.
Okay, let me read the next one.
Do they never walk past a Christmas display? Do they never walk past a store with a Christmas tree? Give me a break.
All right. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, a Republican running for U.S. Senate, sued two school districts, Round Rock and Leander, for allegedly refusing to display the Ten Commandments in classrooms. These rogue officials and board members blatantly disregarded the will of Texas voters who expect the legal and moral heritage of our state to be displayed in accordance with the law. Round Rock and Leander chose to defy a clear statutory mandate, and this lawsuit makes clear that no district may ignore Texas law without consequence. So what in that was supposed to change my mind?
Well, no, I'm not saying it changes your mind, but it gives you a little bit of both sides, right? No. Like they're saying, like the majority said, hey, we just want to show this side too, I guess. But
yeah.
But no, I just think that that statement was ridiculous, to say that your kids can't walk past something and have it not mean anything
okay,
to them.
Okay, well, let's let the BLM flags fly. Let's let the trans pride flags keep flying. Just walk past if you don't like
it. It's not, well, that's the thing, is it's not about them just being there. Mm-hmm. It's about the teachers teaching about
them. But it's
them
about them being there.
And being indoctrinated by
We've railed them. Against hanging up trans pride
flags. Well, now
flags
we have. Yes, because it went further than that. Yeah. It went further than teaching kids about specific flags. It went further than teaching kids about things. It went further than that.
And I'm not comparing the trans pride flag to the Ten Commandments. I'm just saying, you get into these situations where if you allow one thing, okay, then do they have to allow an excerpt from the Quran?
Right.
Would you like that? I don't think so.
No, and I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you that it's a separation of church and state. I agree with you on this one, this issue, as far as I don't think it should be a law to have the Ten Commandments in school. That seems ridiculous. But I just thought that statement was kind of silly. I don't want my kids walking past the Ten Commandments. Do they not walk past a Christmas tree?
Do they allow Christmas trees in schools?
I believe sometimes they do, and they're called giving trees and things like that. They just change names of things. That's why, like, Halloween, it's called something else. They call things harvest festivals and have the same pumpkins and things. And
because everything's taken too far, right? Mm-hmm. You allow one thing, then you allow another thing. It's why as much as I love him, I was opposed to Coach Kennedy praying on the 50-yard line.
But again, teach your kids not to be offended by everything. Teach your kids to keep walking. Teach your kids to, you know, just not be offended by everything. However, like I said, I mean, if a kid walks by you with a you know, a LGBTQ shirt, a rainbow shirt, or a Black Lives Matter shirt. No, like, you shouldn't be offended by that. Yeah. However, if a teacher, like the representative from the school, mm-hmm. is hanging that in their classroom, that's a different story. And right. like I said, this is a different story.
Yeah.
But I also think that there should be a different mentality in all of this.
There's so many things at the center of all of this stuff, mm-hmm. right? That you can still teach, and that would never have been controversial if you didn't tie it to certain things, like a certain religion, a certain group, mm-hmm. like BLM. Hey, equality.
Yeah.
You know, inclusion, belonging. These are lessons that are good and valuable and important to create good human beings. But now you're like, no, Black Lives Matter as an organization. Mm-hmm. Don't say all lives matter. Don't say. And the same with, yeah, trans. It's like you're hanging a trans flag, but what is the meaning there? Again, the same thing. Inclusion, kindness, equality. Yeah. Like, and with the Ten Commandments. You know, you can share those lessons with kids without tying it to a certain religion, ideology, movement, mm-hmm. organizations. But we're just obsessed with, like, no, it's got to be whatever all I support. Nothing. Right. And so, you know, just mm-hmm. teach kids. First of all, just teach kids. Okay. Just teach them the basics.
Yes.
To read, to write, to add and subtract, mm-hmm. science. That'd and be let's great. Just let everything else go. Okay.
Yeah. I do
just
think. Stupid. Yeah. Let's get back to that.
Let's just get back sure. to that. And then we don't even have to have these segments on the show. All right, we'll get to comments coming up next. First, if you are thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team are great. And some of the feedback that we hear from folks is really about the level of communication and Wes's expertise in the local market. And he's been doing this for a long time in our area. So one of the things they do is he'll give you a free market analysis if you reach out. So he can give you down to the neighborhood what your expectations can be for a home, you know, where they should price your home, where it might sell, how long it might take to sell, how other homes are performing. It's much more detailed than you're going to get from one of those national sites. So start there. Go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. Then reach out to Wes and get that free market analysis. Sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, on state revenue being lower, even lower than expected, hold sub sailor, balanced budget is Ferguson's code for raising taxes. That's all he has. Again, yes, doesn't that sound nice? A balanced budget. Again, I too can balance a budget if you give me an endless pot of money, bottomless pot of money. I'll balance the hell out of that budget. Michael, guarantee they put us here on purpose, all to create the need for government assistance, or all on a slow, steady march to an income tax. Denise Young, Nostra Brandis? Yes. Unfortunately, I'm not a genius who can predict the future. I just have the smallest amount of common sense. And when somebody tells me they're going to do something, I tend to believe them. On the dangers of socialism, Lil Miss J, Brandy, the extreme leftist groups have mentioned re-education camps in some of their meetings. We researched some of their actions from the 90s just a few days ago. And yes, we are moving down the path toward communism. Thank you, Trin Ha. Thank you, Brandy and Nicole, for giving her a voice. This is important, especially her point of view. Much respect. And she was fantastic. And in fact, she's running for Congress in the 8th, but her campaign or site is up, but her campaign's not really off the ground yet. So we'll have her back on to talk about that when she's ready.
She is so adorable.
She's really, yeah.
She's so, I mean, her whole family, they seem so sweet.
Yeah,
so,
they do. I'm really excited for her. Just such a good story that people mm-hmm. need to hear. Looking up for Jesus, because there's way more freeloaders after handouts than producers. Communism on the rise. Yeah, there's people who, gosh, if you're going to give me free stuff, why would I work for anything? Mm-hmm. Matthew Cook, the progressive socialists never seem to talk to those that have actually experienced it. Yeah, they don't want to hear voices like Trin's. And God forbid she's running as a Republican, then it'd be like, nope, don't want to hear it. Absolutely no interest in it. JB New, some Americans feel as though they deserve everything to be handed to them. They see socialism as a way to have everything for free and that they can improve on others' failed attempts. Yeah. And I like that the way she put that, like our American exceptionalism makes us believe that we can do socialism better. We can't. Okay. We can't. And we won't. Auburn raising the sales tax without a vote and what's happening with these other cities. Todd Welch, Washington's legislature loves to force cities to implement local taxes and fees to get access to our tax money that they take from us. Utility fees are the same concept. It is interesting how it's like, so that the pot of money that the state has to give out is our money. Mm-hmm. But in order to get our money for something as basic as public safety, we have to give them even more of our money.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that just fascinating.
Yeah, interesting.
The judge explaining why she's got to give 11 years to a 20-year-old who tried to murder a woman. The last Robespierre, everyone needs to stay armed and vigilant because our system won't offer you any justice. I agree. And look, I mean, they're trying to take our guns away. They want us to be reliant on the government, right? Mm-hmm. So they want to make things so unsafe that we have to rely. We'll give them more tax money. We'll give up our rights, anything to get the government to just please protect us. Please make our communities safe. Delaney, the exact reason I don't leave the house without the homies, Smith and Wesson. Yes. Always good homies. Always good homies to bring with you. Nicki Minaj, Watermelon Shug, she's not being used. She also spoke out about the COVID vaccine injuring her cousin. No, and I'm not saying she's being used as some, like, unintelligent pawn, but yes, there's a lot of people speaking out against what's happening in Nigeria, but she is a good spokesperson for the Trump administration. She's a Black woman who is very prominent in culture, who can reach audiences that aren't hanging on every word of Donald Trump. And that's important for them. So
I love how they're just dismissed. If you speak for Trump, you must not be able to think for yourself.
Yes, 100%. Like, you must be an absolute moron. Mm-hmm. So there was a comment in here. President America said part of Travis Couture's statement was that there's going to be no new jobs in 2026. And that's great. I actually want to read part of that. So Travis Couture put out a lengthy statement about the economic numbers. He said, the part of the forecast that should concern every Washingtonian is the outlook for jobs. Our state is expected to add only 11,000 jobs in 2025, barely a blip, and add zero jobs in 2026. Zero. We don't even get back to modest job growth in this forecast until 2029. For perspective, Washington has averaged more than 2% annual job growth for most of the last decade and a half. The next 4 years are projected to average barely 0.5%. That's historically weak, and it's a warning sign. And they'll blame it on Donald Trump. I'll find some way. It's Donald Trump. Unemployment. It's the AI. Mm-hmm. And part of it probably is going to be AI. We're a very tech-heavy state. So a lot of these jobs, layoffs, are related to AI. That is a reality. So I can't blame every single job loss on Democrats. They can't blame every job loss on Donald Trump. But we have an underlying climate that's not business friendly here. And to dismiss that is just a lie, right? It's just an absolute ridiculous falsehood. Let me see here. I have one more super chat I want to fit in. Old Sub Sailor. We're already at risk for communism. Look at who's being elected now. The generation that has and is coming of age has been indoctrinated their entire life. It makes me very sad. And they might have no one, certainly not in our public schools, teaching them about the dangers of communism and socialism. Absolutely.
And
not.
If we can't start, do that. If we start separating the way we kind of are, where everyone from New York and Washington are going to Texas and going to Arizona and going to Florida, then and we start to divide as a
then
nation,
the commies will be left.
It will be this like civil war situation where we just have everybody that can think for themselves in the South and everybody that is, or like the place falls apart in the North. It's going to be wild.
You know who's going to win that one, though, right?
I do.
As Delaney said, we roll with homies.
But there we go again, right?
Yeah. I mean, the blue states would take a day.
I know.
If it was really, it would take a day.
It
let's
would
be
take
honest.
Not long at all.
I'm not advocating for civil war. No, I'm just saying if it comes down to civil war to protect us from communism, that's a valid reason for a civil war. All right. We'll get to our closing sanity check, which is something sane said by Joy Reid. I never thought that this would ever happen. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord, speaking of housing issues and the direction of the state, reach out to our friends at the Rental Housing Association. First, become a member. It is the best way to make sure that you have someone in your corner when you're navigating the new rules and laws like rent control and regulations around being a landlord and a housing provider in the state of Washington. And also, they're going to be down in Olympia for the entire legislative session advocating on your behalf. And it's important that you have someone doing that down in Olympia as they look to just make your lives miserable, honestly. It's like this Katie Wilson and all her comments that are anti-landlord and we need social housing. And so Seattle, especially if you're a landlord in Seattle, buckle up, buttercups. because you've got a socialist mayor who thinks landlords are evil, who's about to take office. All the more reason to become a member of RHA, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. And while you're there, sign up to attend their 2025 holiday gala. Everyone is invited. Just sign up, rhawa.org. Looks like it's going to be a fun evening in Seattle, December 13th for that. They were like, Brandy, tell your viewers they can come. We want to party with all your friends. I was like, okay, I'll do that, rhawa.org. All right, with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, so Joy Reid, of course, no longer graces us on MSNBC. What is it called right now? They changed it. It's not MSNBC. It's M something, something or other. I can't remember what it is. Mm-hmm. They had to change their name. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. We're not watching it anyway. But Joy Reid was on a podcast, and she was talking about that issue in LA with the black lesbian who threw a fit, understandably so, because there was a dude in the locker room at Gold's Gym. And Joy Reid said this.
I would be disturbed. I'm telling you, I would be alarmed. I'm alarmed enough when I see a woman with her dangling boobies. Yeah. If I saw a penis in the ladies' locker room, I would freak out too. This is nothing against trans anybody. What it's saying is, if I turn around and I see a penis in front of me inside of the room, yeah, I would probably go to management and say, wait a minute, why is there somebody, mm-hmm, a naked man in this room? Because just the world we live in, just from a safety standpoint, and just from a, you know, from a privacy standpoint, I would. So I can see why she would have gone and reported to management. There's a man naked in the band. Now, if they clarified and they said, well, trans, da, 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 okay, but I think they should take her concerns also seriously.
Is that so hard? Joy, I agree. Isn't this beautiful? That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you'd like to become a subscriber to the show and help fund the show and our mission and our movement and our coverage, you can do that for just $5 a month. I think it's a great alternative to spending money on something like the Seattle Times. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. We'd love to have you as a paid subscriber, contribute to our daily subscriber show pools, get access to Sundays with subscribers, all that good stuff. All right, we'll see you tomorrow for our final live show of the week.